But I understand now. I do understand. I can't have money. I can't. It's easier not to have money than to have money.
Paul, you said, by the way, I just want to say that the documentaries you made, I thought they're really moving and honest.
Oh, thank you.
I really enjoyed watching them. I kind of did them as my research, but I feel like you showed us a lot of who you are on those. You said on one of them, gambling's the killer and it ain't going away, which really hit me.
Yeah.
So have you accepted that this is who you are?
Yeah, surrendered. Yeah, I accepted, you know, acceptance is like, you know, I know I've got an illness now. I just used to feel I was a bad person, always trying to be good, you know, lose all our money, you know, and really beat myself up majorly about it, you know, like, you know, you horrible man, you know, how could you lose all the money? You know what you're doing. But I know now I am an ill person. I have a choice today. I didn't have a choice before. I know today I'm an ill person. Before, I didn't know. I just thought I was not a nice person, always trying to be good. Now I know if I have a bet, it's not ending till it ends with naught. You know, I wasn't a gambler, compulsive gambler, not someone who has a lorry load of money and then they'll take it out and go, you know what, I'll go and buy. Like, it hurt me to go and buy a pair of trainers for £100, but I could easily put £10,000 on something.
Wow.
That's how it gets you. Do you know what I mean? It gets you like that. It's like, well, I don't need the trainers. Do you know what I mean? I need the bet, but I don't need the trainers.
Wow.
And that's what it was like. You know, I know mates who gamble, who win, and they go, bang, take it out, go and buy a golf club or a set of golf clubs. I never, ever, ever took money out and spent it on me. Ever.
Fuck.
Ever.
So when you say, you know you have an illness, was there a moment where you got that realisation where you're not a bad person, you got an illness?
Yeah. I think, I mean, then I start looking back and tracking back. And then we had the mind thing when I went into the MRI scan and how the brain, you know, you got to remember, people listen to this who are compulsive gamblers who don't know they're compulsive gamblers. When you're winning, you can't sleep. If you had a bet before you went to bed, it'd be probably the equivalent of having 60 Red Bulls and 50 black coffees. It's impossible to get asleep because you're like, your brain is just so overactive. It's horrible. You know, I've been 48 hours, 20 easy 24s and 48 hours just through just gambling. Shit. Just constant, because the brain is so, you just don't get tired. But the thing with gambling, and I said it's the worst, is it's from here to there so quickly. You drink or take drugs, you have a drink, you come off, or the drugs, you sort of come down like that. With the gambling, you're up here, everything's great, you're winning, it's all gone. And literally like that, and you're like, it's gone, where's it gone? Because there's no rationale, there's no, I've got to pay that so I won't lose that, or I've got to pay that. It's hard to explain, but it's like you're a six-year-old, you don't understand. You know, I've got to pay my mortgage, or I've got to pay the rent, but it doesn't register. It's really horrible.
So if you had a choice between mortgage and gambling, you'd gamble, would you?
If I was in the depths of gambling.
Yeah.
You know, if I weren't gambling now, no chance. You know what I mean? Rent paid, bang, bang, bang.
Yeah.
But yeah, when you're in the depths of gambling, yeah, no chance.
Wow.
No chance. And I mean, and that's where it's just the rationale goes out the window.
Yeah.
It's always more, you know, it's the excitement of the bet. The winning just prolongs it. It's not like, oh, I've won, I can go and buy a Bentley. Do you know what I mean? It's not. It's like, I've won, so I'm still in the game. I can still keep on doing something.
So basically, there's no end point.
There's no end point. The only end point is zero. Zero. That is it. You know, and when that happens, people who listen to this who have a gambling problem or understand this, it gets to a stage where it's so overwhelming, the betting, that when you've lost everything, it's like a relief. Now, how crazy is that? Yeah. It's like, oh, fucking, I don't have to do that anymore.
Oh,
I don't have to do that anymore now. I've got no money left. How crazy does that sound if you're not a compulsive gambler?
Yeah.
You know, but it takes you over so much that you just can't stop. So when you've lost everything, you're like, oh, what a relief. You know, like when you do your breathing or something like that, and you just become, it's like a calmness comes over.
Like
it's
you, like, just go in the toilet.
Yeah,
after
like, yeah, yeah, hours, yeah, yeah, that was a 5 minute calm. Yeah. This is like, whoa, I was on the verge of like, just wetting my pants and going home, if I'm being honest. Yeah. It was that bad.
You called it a hideous disease.
Yeah.
Shit.
Yeah, I would call it hideous because, and I say hideous because with the drinking, you see the drinking, you see the devastation. The gamblings are quite, you know, it only happens, you know, I know if I go out of here today and I have a drink, I don't know when I'm getting home. I seriously don't. If when I left the house in the afternoon or in the morning, lunchtime on a Sunday, and my wife went, you're going down the pub, yeah, watch the live games and I'll be home. What time you be home? I'll be home at 6. I swear I had all the intentions in the world of coming home at 6. I never closed that door and thought, fuck it, I'm not coming home at 6. Is she mad? I honestly didn't. But soon as it got to 6, it was impossible. It's impossible to put the drink down. And it's seeable, I know. With the gambling, it goes that quick from here to there that it's not as slow, if you know what I mean. So sometimes you forget. You know, I've had to close all the doors. My wife looks after everything. You know, I'm a tenure. I have pocket money, if I have pocket money.
Shit. You know, so everything. So she manages all your money?
Everything. I do not have anything. You know, if I want to, you know, I have a card, but she knows the card. She'll see it on the bank statements. I buy petrol, and if I'm out, I buy food. But that is it. You know, she dictates everything. Which, when it first happened, you know, you're like, I'm 52, fuck. But I understand now. I do understand. I can't have money. I can't. It's easier not to have money than to have money.
Fuck. How does that make you feel?
Yeah, all right. I mean, when it first started, I was like, how dare you? You know what I mean? It's like...
Oh, was it driven by her or...?
Yeah, I was... Yeah. I mean, she's been through a lot. My wife's been through a lot. The problem is when you're a drinker and a gambler or a drug addict and you stop and people go, oh my God, doing amazing. Everybody forgets you've dropped an hand grenade behind you. You know, destruction is like no other. You know, my wife still today will always be on tender hooks with the gambling.
Has she been with you through the whole journey?
We met about 9 years ago, so we got 3 kids together. But she's seen some bad ones. I'm not going to lie. I mean, the one in lockdown a couple of years ago when I'd done all our deposit for a house, that was
fuck.
Was that
on gambling?
Yeah, that was the one. That was the one for me. That was probably the straw that broke the camel's back.
But she stayed with you through it all?
Yeah, she stayed. Her mum's dad was a gambler.
Oh.
So, her mum's dad. So,
do you think there's an attraction? Like, yeah, it was,
so when she went to her mum would be like, he's not a bad person. He's not doing it. He doesn't dislike you. It's not a hatred towards you. It's an illness. It's him. It's not you. Because that's what people think. You know, you don't come home at night and you stay out drinking. You know, your wife or your boyfriend or girlfriend or husband or partner would always be thinking, well, they must hate me. They must hate me with a passion. Why wouldn't they come home? Or why would they lose all our money? And it's not. You hate yourself. You hate yourself with a passion.
Mm.
And that was what it was like for me. It was something that I don't forget, but I know it's out there if I don't keep on doing what I do day at a time.
So do you think it's easier for your wife to walk away or to stay?
I think that'll be her. Yeah. That'll be her.
Yeah.
I mean, you should get to me. It looks like Brad Pitt. No, I'm joking. All right.
No. Sorry. You know. No.
No, I'm joking. Yeah. No, you know what? They'll come. It can't keep on that. She knows now that I know. She knows now I got an illness. So if I go back now, you know, she'd have every right to go, you know what, I've had enough.
Yeah.
You know, Paul, you know now.
Right.
Yeah.
So she can see the switch from not being aware what it is to knowing what it is.
Yeah, you know, from the program, everything, to know that this is an illness and, you know, I know I have a problem. That was the thing with being an alcoholic. You know, I went like 6 years without a drink and I went back and drunk again. people think because you've stopped for 6 years and you go back, it'll be steady. It's like 100 times worse because you know. And that's the insanity. So when you're drinking and you know you shouldn't be drinking, it makes it 100 times worse.
Wow. Do you know what I mean? So it's actually not that pleasurable an experience.
It's not pleasurable. And you literally start off from where you started from. Do you know what I mean? It's not like you go, oh, I've been 6 years without a drink. Now I'll come back and I'll probably just be able to sip a wine or have a couple of beers.
Yeah.
You literally, it's like the follow on from the day you stop. Like, it's like that, you know. Mm. It's, you know, it never gets better.
And you called it a disease. I mean, like, that's almost like a cancer.
Well, it's not like cancer because some cancers go away. This don't go away.
Wow.
This don't go away. I mean, that's harsh, but you know, you can be lucky enough to get cancer. I have melanoma, so, and lucky enough it went away, but this ain't going away. It's a day at a time. You know, more people commit suicide through gambling than any other addiction in the world.
Wow. And what do you think is the worst or the hardest? The drugs, the drink, or the gambling?
I would say the gambling, but it's been made easy for me, if that makes sense.
Because of the lack of money
supply.
Because of
everything, there's a lot, you know. Because I'm Paul Merson. You know, if I'm Jack the Builder, who's struggling with gambling, who stopped gambling, whoever think, you know, he's doing really well, and he comes home one day and he has a big argument with his girlfriend or his partner or whoever it may be, and he goes, you know what, fuck it, I'm going to have a bet. He can walk into any betting shop he wants in the country and have a bet. You know, me, I can't do that.
So in a way, that's a gift
It's a great
to
thing
you.
For yeah. me. Oh, it's a gift for me, you yeah. know, so it's easier for me. But I would say it's the worst addiction. You know, I know drinking, I'm surprised. When I stopped drinking many years ago, when I went into treatment in, you know, 93, 94, when it became a big story with the drug, I stopped drinking. And you're like, I'm not going to drink because if I drink, everybody's going to know anyway. You know what I mean? Mm. But when I started drinking again, no one gave a flying.
Really?
Do you know what I mean? Yeah, it was weird. No one ever come up to me and went, what are you doing, Paul?
Yeah.
No, you know what I mean?
Do you
no
wish
one.
They had?
Not really. It's just... Not really. It was just, probably wouldn't have listened anyway. At the end of the day, it's my choice, you know. It was, you know, well, my choice at the time, but you don't really listen to people. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
You know, there's a saying, you know, in recovery, is stick around the people that understand. I don't like the word stick with winners because I think there's a lot of winners out there that do drink and gamble, if you know what I mean.
Yeah.
You know, I don't think you're just a winner because you stop drinking and gambling. So, but it's being around people that when I talk to someone about my problems, they're a nodding head and not a, that's not good.
Yeah.
So, you know, being around people who have been in my position.
Mm. You said that it's constantly in you and constantly waiting. So do you think this is something you were almost born with?
I don't know, you know, I don't know. I don't know. I don't know if it's nurtured or natured.
Yeah.
Because I have this with football. I have this with football. I thought a part of my footballing ability, I personally thought it was given.
Yeah.
You know, in my opinion, and I think that's the same with this. You know, I think, you know, people go, yeah, but if you didn't have the bet, well, you never know, but that doesn't mean you're not. Because there'd be people who never have a drink till they're 27, 30 or 40. Some people retire from work and then cannot stop. They start to drink and they cannot stop. You know, so it's, you know, the saying is the first drink's too many and 100's not enough.
Wow.
And that is it. Soon as the first one goes into my body, I just become completely powerless over. And I know it's in me all the time.
Mm. Why and when did you initially choose to speak out about it? I'm thinking of you, it's not us.
Why
there's a deceptive angle on this.
Yeah, I know, yeah. That's why I fought my phone. I didn't think I'd touch my phone. Why and when?
Well, let's do one at a time.
Yeah, when I mean the drinking one, I was coming back from the British Legion in Teddon, where I live, and it was a Sunday evening, 10:30. It wasn't my worst drink. It wasn't like I'd been out 2 days or, you know, I'm out of it. I was coming home 10:30 and I thought, I've had enough. just had enough. What I cannot keep on feeling like this. I was going to the pub, wasn't having fun, was just sitting in my phone and just drinking, literally just drinking, like constantly. And literally in the pub shut, I would take a lorry load of drink home and sit indoors and drink it. You know, so I just had enough and I rung up AA, Alcoholics Anonymous, the next morning. A good friend of mine who'd been waiting, took me to a meeting.
Waiting as in they knew?
They knew, yeah. They know, they see it. And then the gambling one was, I stopped and then we got into lockdown, we saved up money. And I have to save up. You know, I'm not a professional footballer anymore. You know, whatever I do, I have to save up, you know. So we saved up really hard to get a house for the kids, security for my wife and everything. And I got addicted to the news. Like I got addicted to drink and drugs and gambling, I got addicted to the news. I was hanging on to everything Boris Johnson and the other people were saying. And at 5 o'clock, I would sit there and honestly, in the end, my anxieties got so bad, my head was like, that's it. I'm never working at Sky again. Football would just be on behind closed doors. Every game would be on every night and that would be the way it is. And my brain, being a compulsive gambler, was, right, I've got our savings. Let's race it up. Let's win the house. And I lost a whole lot. And for 2 weeks, I hadn't told my wife. And all I could see was the kids playing on the sofa when I was in it. And I just wanted to kill myself. I just thought, my God, I cannot believe what I've done. I cannot believe. And then I just brought up the courage to tell her.
How did you tell her?
Just said, I need to tell you something. And she thought I was joking. She thought I was joking, but yeah, it went ballistic. And rightly so, do you know what I mean? But stuck by me again.
How did you recover from that?
Start again. Mm. You know, it is. I mean, it's just start again. It's you either go that way or you come up that way. And, you know, I chose to go that way.
Mm.
And that was it. I mean, but I'm not lying. I had major thoughts about killing myself. Major thoughts. You know, just every time the kids laughing and joking and thinking, my God, you know, how can I keep on letting people down every time? Constantly letting people down, but not wanting to let people down. You know, it's a horrible, you know, you start thinking you're going mad, you think you're going insane. And that's not a nice feeling either.
And how did you pull yourself out of that low feeling? No one else can do it.
You can't. You've got to keep on going. I mean, past experiences help. You know, I do know that it can change. You know, at the start, you know, it's easy to say that now and you pick yourself up. But at the start, when the tunnel used to be a lot darker, you know, I used to see a bit of a light at the end of it. It was like, I don't see the end. Now, through past experience, I know I've come up again, if you know what I mean. I know that I've recovered and I know how you can do it. But I don't take it for granted. I don't go, you know, I know what it's like, so let's go out and have a drink and get drunk and go mad. And then after the summer's finished, let's start again. It doesn't work like that.
No.
But it's just past experiences that I've been lucky enough to know that I can do it.
Yeah. Is it true you lost 7 million quid?
You know, I would say more, but I really worried about money. You know what? I lost time.
Right.
That's this horrible feeling. You lose time, like where you're somewhere, but you're not there. You know what I mean? I've been on holiday in Florida and not been there. You know, like everything's going on around. I'm looking at my phone or I'm waiting for the bar to open. Yeah, I never ever lived in the moment. I never lived in the day. And that's what addiction does. It takes you away from the moment. You know, and that's what I lost time. You know, my boy said to me the other day, he said, how come so-and-so's his friend's got a big, lovely house and all that, and we haven't? And I went, because I gambled.
How old is your son?
He's 7. I said, I gambled, I lost it all.
Oh.
I would have had that, I could have had one of them 10 times over. I could.
Yeah.
But, and it's like to say, don't you do that.
Yeah.
You know, and they're the message you've got to give. There's no point beating around the bush and saying, oh, you know, we haven't because he got more money than me or whatever. That's not the case. It's simple as that. I gambled.
Mm.
I gambled.
And was it hard telling your kids about it?
No, I just said it really quick.
Right.
I, 87, I said, you know, I gamble.
Mm.
That's what happens. When you gamble, you lose everything.
Yeah.
You know, I could have had that out. You know, I could have, easy. Not a problem at all. But that's what addiction does. That's what gambling does. Mm. You know, and if you lay the seed in his head, you know.
Yeah.
And that's the thing. So, yeah, it's, thinking about it now, it is hard, but you surrender. The money's gone. That's the one thing you do think. You know, you go, you're not getting that back. Forget about it. Thank God you're alive.
Yeah. Are you happy now?
Yeah. Yeah, I would say so. I find sometimes I'm not. Sometimes I find it boring. You know, sometimes I can sit there. My life's always been up here or down there. It's like being a roller coaster. So even though the buzz of being up here, there's always been that buzz of down here of getting back up to there, you know, and it's been like that. Sometimes I've always searched the whole of my life since I was probably 16 years of age is to be there. And I'm virtually there. I'm like, you know, like that little in the sea. And sometimes I sit there and I go, boring, boring. And then my wife will go, yeah, but is it better than when you were?
If you love to travel like me and you understand the power in escaping the money for time exchange trap, but you just don't know how to do it, then building an Airbnb consultancy business could be exactly what you have been looking for. Right now in the UK, there is a completely untapped opportunity through helping struggling Airbnb hosts by turning around their underperforming properties and generating you huge commission payments in the process. We are going to teach you all of the tools and all of the techniques that we've learned over the last 5 years through building our very own multiple six-figure Airbnb business, arming you with everything that you need to swoop in and save the day. Minimal startup costs, zero risk, and almost unlimited potential. Sound good? Welcome to the Airbnb Consultant. Contact us through any of the channels included in the studio notes to get the conversation started.
Down here, and you're like, it's 100 times better. Of course it is. Well, take that then. Mm. It might not be 100 times better than up here, but it's 100 times better than down there. So that, I find that sometimes odd. I'm not going to lie. I do, you know, because as I say, from 16 years of age, it's just been so natural to be up here or down here. You know, it's never
is
been.
Is that when you had your first bet when you were 16?
Yeah, at 16, yeah. First bet.
That's really early, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, you say that, there's a lot, there'll be a lot of kids now gambling, but a lot younger than that.
Yeah. So I'm a football fan. I wouldn't say a crazy mad football fan, but I'm a Liverpool fan, and you've caused me plenty of pain in my life, which, you know, thank you for all you've done for the sport and, you know, the rivalries you've created and that. I must admit, I was completely shocked when you left Arsenal, couldn't believe it.
Yeah.
So can we talk about that?
Yeah, 100%. Addiction.
Really?
100%. I got offered a 4-year contract to Arsenal. I mean, people forget the year before I left, at the end, that season was probably my best.
I was going to say, you were at
peak. It was probably
peak.
My season. I mean, yeah. I was playing every game under Arsene.
Yeah.
You know, I played my best football. I had a hernia. And literally the day I was fit to play, I played again. You know, so I got offered a 4-year contract. I was offered 580 grand a year at Arsenal, which is, what's that, 12? I think it's about 12
a
grand.
Lot, sounds like a lot of money
nearly
for back 12 then.
12 grand a week. Yeah. And Middlesbrough offered me £20,000 a week to play in the Championship in 1997. And I couldn't get my head round the difference that is. It's like eight grand a week difference. So it's 32 grand a month. And as a gambler and with addictions, as I said before, I can't rationale everything out. You know what I mean? I just had to go.
Could Arsenal not match that? Was there not a?
Well, there wasn't even Dennis Bergkamp there.
Right.
I mean, it was extraordinary.
Yeah.
Extraordinary amount of money for the Championship. I mean, yeah, extraordinary.
Yeah.
But it wasn't the money. It was the gambling.
Do you regret leaving Arsenal?
No. I when I got up there, I loved it up there, like with the people I met, the fans. Yeah, I loved it in the end. I went to the World Cup. Who knows, you know, a lot of players come in at Arsenal. Maybe they might not have if I'd have stayed, but, you know, good players come in who, you know, people like Perez, who, for me, I think he's better than me. So I don't question that.
Yeah. I also want to talk about your football. Thank you for sharing openly about this, by the way.
I think that's important. I think, as I say, if someone's listening, they might go, you know what, that hits home to me, and they might go and get help.
So if there is something that you would say about someone who's struggling with drink, drugs or gambling, what would it be?
You're an ill person who needs to get well. You're not a bad person who's trying to get good every other day. And that's the thing, that when you're drinking, gambling, taking drugs, you beat yourself up so badly, your self-esteem goes, you hate yourself with a passion, and you come off the drink, the drugs or the gambling, and you have all them feelings and the hatred you have for yourself, and you don't want to feel like that. So what do? I know, I have a drink, a bet or a drug to take me out the way I feel. And it's just a merry-go-round. It's just like vicious. And it's understanding that you're not a bad person trying to get well, trying to get good. You are an ill person who needs to get well. If you went to the doctors tomorrow and the doctor said you've got a nut allergy, you're not going to go out and buy a packet of nuts, are you? And that's the way I look at it now.
Mm. So let's talk about football for a bit.
Yeah, thank you.
How's football changed since you're a player?
I don't know. I didn't know it did. I thought there was a goal up there and then a goal up there.
Well, there's VAR for a start.
Yeah, I know. Yeah, that's Robbie James.
Your friend, Matt, the
game's probably got quicker.
Yeah.
Probably got quicker because they've gone for fitter players now.
Yeah.
I think, you know, when I played, I thought it was, you had to pass the ball first and then you had to be quick, or you had to be an athlete and then you had to be quick. I think it's all the other way around now.
Right, so it's all about speed.
You have to be quick, strong, athletic, and then if you pass the ball, you're like one of the best players in the world.
Right.
In my opinion.
Yeah.
You know, I think, you look at people now and they're getting accolades and people forget about players so quickly. Do you know what I mean? It's like people go to me, could you play now? How would you be now? And I always throw it back and go, how would the players playing now be able to play when I played? You know, it's a different game. You know, you get kicked from pillar to post. You know, you take a lot of bad knocks. You know, it is different.
Yeah.
I like watching it now. Don't get me wrong. I love it. I watch it. I love it. It's quicker.
Yeah.
You know, that's the one thing that they're for Sikhs. You know, look at Kyle Walker. You know, he's like 32, 33, and he's still lightning quick. I mean, that is, you know, you've got to give him credit. You know, for someone who would work to keep his pace. Do you know what I mean? You don't just get up in the morning and go, because, you know, a lot of footballers over time, the one thing that goes is their pace. You know, that's the first thing. Your legs go. You know, you get up one morning, you're like, whoa, where are they gone?
Yeah.
But he's like, for me, I just think he's an absolute credit. I like that he could keep that pace.
Yeah.
And people go, yeah, but there's been other people who are quicker than him, but they're not as quick as him now at his age. So that tells every football fan and everybody, he looks after himself and he works on certain attributes.
Mm.
You know, so for me, you know, that's where the game's changed.
Yeah. And what about the commercial side of the game? Do you think that's changed in any way?
In what way?
Well, how much money is in the game? Of course, all the big wealthy owners buying the clubs.
Yeah. They've got to be earning, the clubs are making it to give them the money.
Yeah.
You know, this is everywhere. You know, I was in Florida in the summer, you know, and the football's on and the Premier League's everywhere. You know, wherever country you go to, the Premier League's on. I think it's the biggest marketing thing in the world, product in the world, you know, is the Premier League. You know, the money, wow, yeah. I mean, I think certain players get too much. I'm not going to lie. I think they do. But I think the top class player, I don't think they get a lot. I don't think they do. I think...
Right.
I don't.
Yeah.
You know, people go on.
Who
people,
should be paid more than, do you reckon?
I don't know. You know, people like Kevin De Bruyne, for me, is like one of the best players in the world. Yeah. Now, if he's on 350 grand a week, what is the problem?
Yeah.
You know, let's be honest. You know, Tom Cruise gets probably 40, 50 million pound a film. Has he ever won an Oscar? No one says anything.
Mm.
Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
You know, Arnold Schwarzenegger gets, how much does he get for a film?
Yeah.
you know, but no one ever says anything. It's like, oh, it's all right. They get that because they'll get it back in the cinemas. Well, so do the clubs for the players. You know, I have no problem. Good luck to them. You know, good luck. It's a short career.
Mm.
It is. I mean, you can earn 200 grand a week. That's 100 grand after you slash that 50 off.
For tax?
When they went... No, for drink and drugs. What causes it?
What are you doing? Could be agent's fees. Yeah.
But, like, so you take that off and then you...
That's one
you
know, all, by the way. Yeah.
And then you give you, like, you take that off, then you cut that in half. Still a lot of money, but you live that life. You live that life. You know, if you're getting 100 grand, 200 grand a week, you live a 200 grand a year, a week life. Do you know what I mean? You're going to... You know, gold Rolex or whatever, or a nice watch, or you're going to have a lovely car that all costs money. At 30 years of age, you're 32, because the one thing this has done, the Premier League and how quick it is and everything, you're not really playing till you're 36, 37. You know, your Milners might and a couple of others, but and Walker, but it'd be rare you're going to get players playing it like Ryan Giggs did and Terry Sheringham at 37, 38, 39, or even 40.
Mm.
So, say 32, that's it. At least you'd like to think you've got another 50 years to live.
Yeah.
It's a long time.
And a short
with
career.
With no trade.
Yeah.
No trade. You know, no trade. You're not like you come out and you go, well, I'm an electrician or I'm a builder. They're not.
Mm.
You know, never. You know, my hands are, I'm not being horrible like Ferry. I could do Ferry Liquid adverts. I could. I mean, I've never done a day's work in my life. I'm very... very humble and very grateful. I'm, you know, I shake some of my mates' hands or other people and their hands are like rock, literally like, wow.
Mm.
Like the bottom of someone's foot, if you know what I mean. They're like rock hard. And that's where, you know, I'm very grateful. You know, I know people go, oh, how are you lost all that? It wasn't the money, you know, it was the addiction. It wasn't the money. I wasn't, you know, it doesn't matter how much. Like, people go, oh, what about now if you'd have earned 200-300 grand a week? I'd have done it.
Yeah.
I'd have done it. You know, if I earn 200 grand a week, I'm not having a 10 grand, I'm not having a 10 grand double. You know what I mean? You're going to be having 50, 60, 80 grand bets. Because what's the buzz if you're not going to win what you earn or more? Why would you even bet?
Mm.
And that's the compulsive gambler, because there's people listening and go, who have their £5 bets, first goal score, and they're not compulsive gamblers.
Yeah.
They're not compulsive gamblers. That's exactly, you know, my way of thinking would be, I'd have a bet, it'd win, and then my first reaction would be like, should have put more on, or I should have put that team in with them. You're never happy.
Yeah.
You never, it's always, could have been more. And I think compulsive gamblers understand that, but there's a lot of people out there, that's why I wouldn't go round saying, ban gambling. No, there's people that can gamble.
Yeah.
You know, they can. My problem is the bookmakers know the ones who can't gamble. And that's what it does.
So are you saying they take advantage of those people?
Yeah.
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 Can you talk about that? I mean, I don't really know how it works.
You know, I know what a compulsive gambler is. I know a compulsive gambler is someone who's going to bet on everything. Bang, bang, bang. You know, they want them people because they know they're just going to keep on betting and betting. They don't want a professional gambler ringing up. You know, they don't want a professional gambler. If you rung up now, I could bet you, well, I won't bet because I don't bet anymore. I can tell you now, you can open a betting account with anybody you want, right? And they will close you down if you win, if your first three bets win. If you bet three times, even if you bet three horses that lost, but the prices were changed, like you put your bet on and you bet a horse at 4-1 and it got beat at 4-5, and you put a horse on at 2-1 and it lost at 4-7, and you put a horse on at evens and it got beat at 1-3. All them three have lost. You're stopped.
Why?
Because they don't want you, because you know there's, you do know something, because the prices have changed that much, and they will tell you. I mean, this is what I don't get. You know, I know people have had betting counts shut down because they've won. And they will tell you, I'm shutting you down because you've won. We don't want you. We don't want you.
Mm.
You know, I know. A mate of mine is like, tells me these stories all the time. I never had them stories because I was a major compulsive gambler. They used to love me. You know, yeah. What do you want, Paul?
Yeah.
What do you want? You know, I was getting a company called Stan James in 1998, 99, 2000. I was getting £10,000 free bet. They'd give me 10,000, like you'd ring up one day and they go, oh, you can have a £10,000 free bet. £10,000 free bet. Like you hear now people like 550 quid and that this was like over 20 years ago, they would say, yeah, and it weren't one or two, there's enough, 10,000. So you have a 10,000 free bet, yeah? You're not going to really go back, are you, and have £500 double, are you? Because the what's it called in your brain? The thing that gives you the morphine?
Dopamine.
Dopamine.
Yeah.
So that dopamine, when it's 10 grand, it gives you a lot more. When it's 500, it's like, you know, you've had a 10 grand bet. You've had a 10 grand free bet. So that kicks in.
Wow.
You know, so they know what they're doing.
Shit, yeah. Wow, I didn't know that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
That's why you do these podcasts.
Yeah, to learn. Yeah. Yeah. Something that's always seemed, I'm going to use the word paradox, but I love your thoughts. All the gambling ads are all over the football. What do you think about that position?
You know what? I think, you know, an evening game, night game, live on telly, half-time comes, I know there's going to be an advert. It's irrelevant to what I'm watching, you know, so I understand that I'm watching it and it is irrelevant to what I'm watching. So I have a choice. I turn the telly over or I go out the room and get something. I know that's coming on. What I don't get is when I'm driving at 8 o'clock in the morning or 7 o'clock in the morning somewhere and they're putting prices up and talking about prices for a game at 7:45 that evening. Now that is major triggers to a compulsive gambler that people don't understand. It's like you're in the car, so you're on your own anyway, you know? So, and that easy trigger of like, Man United evens. Oh, I could get everything back here. That's how you could think. That's it. And these, that's a casino in your pocket. So it's not like you don't even have to do anything. You can be stuck in traffic or pull over and go bang, bang, bang and put that bet on and it's done and you're off again. You're off. That's where these adverts at certain times are dangerous. They are so, so dangerous. I mean, even a radio station that I listen to that plays old music because I'm getting old, and they have gambling adverts like bingo and things like that, trying to get the older generation, and it's not good.
Do you think that should be more tightly regulated then?
I think so.
Yeah.
I think you have a joy, you know, have a joy. If you want to go and have one, go out and find it, you know, to have it rammed down your throat.
Yeah.
You know, I think, I might be wrong here, I might be wrong, I might not. I think betting companies target the compulsive gambler and want the compulsive gambler. I think it's changing now. You know, the stories I hear from people, it is changing. I give them that. But there's still stories you hear that are disturbing. But drinking companies don't want alcoholics. They don't target alcoholics.
Why not?
Well, what do they want an alcoholic for? They want people to go out and enjoy themselves. They want the thing to be, you know, fun.
Right.
You know, the slogan on the betting one is like, stop when the fun stops. If you're a compulsive gambler, you just gamble. It's not fun. You know, I put a bet on when I was gambling, put a bet on and all dancing around and all that. It's you know.
Yeah.
You know, so it's, you know, drinking companies don't target alcoholics. They don't want alcoholics. You know, they'd rather there never be an alcoholic. But that's not the same with betting companies. What I've seen on my documentary that I'd done when someone come and see me, you know, they have a thing. You know, and they send free bets through to people that, you know, that have been stopped a while.
Yeah.
Yeah. Some, don't get me wrong, some you hear stories and people have said to me, and you think fair play to that betting company, you know, that they're tightening and that's good.
Yeah.
But there's other stories you hear that, you know, that are not good.
Mm. Here's an interesting paradox. For 10 million, would you do a gambling advert?
No.
100 million?
No.
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 For what reason?
I just, it just doesn't sit right with me.
Yeah.
It's not right. It's, you know it's not right, and you know there's ill people out there. So why would I make money out of ill people?
Yeah.
For me, no. No. Mm. You know, fair play to Peter Shilton. He turned down a big thing, Peter Shilton, when the World Cup was on with Maradona.
What did he turn down?
A lot of money.
For what?
To do an advert with Maradona.
Oh, wow.
And Peter Shilton, I hope he don't mind me talking out of line, but Peter Shilton's not a multi-millionaire.
Yeah.
You know, that would have been...
So that would have been life-changing money for him.
But he has that principle, and I respect him so much.
Yeah.
One, he didn't like Maradona.
Yeah.
You know, God bless him, Maradona. But he's a compulsive gambler as well. So,
right.
For things like that, I have respect for.
Yeah.
You know, you see David Beckham get 150 million for doing the Qatar thing, and you're like, it is like me really going on a betting company next week and it literally and going, have a bet, everybody. It's great. It's fun. You know, it won't hurt you.
Mm.
And it won't hurt a lot of people.
Yeah.
It won't, believe me. But it will hurt enough.
Yeah.
And when committing suicide is the highest in compulsive gambling.
I didn't know that.
Anything. Yeah.
Shit.
Yeah.
Yeah.
More than one person a day.
Do you think yourself, maybe people like Gazza, maybe got enough help inside football, maybe from the FA, etc.?
I don't really, what's the name? I just think they didn't know.
Yeah.
I think when people don't know, it's like watching Who Wants to Be a Millionaire. If you know the answer, it's easy, isn't it, the question? It's so easy.
Yeah.
But if you don't know the answer, it's mind-blowing.
Yeah.
And people didn't know. They didn't know.
Yeah.
You know, I played with a player that I personally think, in this day and age, if he played football, would be one of the best players in the world, in Stan Collymore. He was 6'2". He was big. He was strong. He was quick. He could score with both feet. He two-footed. He had everything, but he struggled with depression.
Mm.
Now, when we were playing and he had depression, people just thought he was one ungrateful person because he earns a lorry load of money. He's playing the best sport in the world, in my opinion.
Yeah.
And he can be so unhappy and do the things he was doing. When he weren't, he was ill. He struggled with depression. Now, in this day and age, we understand about mental health now. You know, it's a thing that you can come out and talk. And if he played today, with what he had, he would be one of the best players in the world, in my opinion.
Mm. Yeah, that's sad.
Yeah, it is really. It is sad. I don't know how he feels. I've never talked to him about it. But I played with him and I knew what he was like. And today, it would not have been a problem. It would not have been a problem. People now, for me, I think are so understandable today.
Yeah.
You get the odd person. You know, even I done a talk the other week and it's like, oh, not really, it's self-inflicted. Not really. Why would I want to hurt myself that badly on purpose? You know, it has changed for the good.
Yeah, that's good. How did you find the transition from finishing football and then all of a sudden, shit?
Yeah.
Or did you plan it?
Who, me? I didn't plan a day. No, I got lucky. You got to get lucky. You got to be lucky to be a footballer, and you got to be lucky to do what I got into. I was manager at Walsall. I got the manager's job. I always wanted to be a manager. From the age of about 28, I always wanted to be a football manager. And I got given an unbelievable opportunity at Walsall. Great little club, well run. You know, they have a solid hardcore 4,500 where they could be bottom of the league or top of the league. It doesn't really change a lot. They're loyal. And I worked under a lot of top managers and I fouled miserably. That's my only regret in football. I fouled so miserably. I was drinking and gambling like a maniac and I didn't give it what I should have given it. Because there's not enough hours in the day to be a football manager. Honestly, that must be
one of the hardest jobs.
It's 25 hours a day.
Right.
There's only 24 in a day, but it's 25. There's not enough hours. You're looking after everybody. You're powerless over everybody. You know, you got to rely on everybody around you. And it's hard. And I struggled. And that was my regret. I got the sack, and rightly so, in the end. And I always look back and thought, I could have been a good manager. I know my football. You know, I could sit around a table and, you know, I was on Super Sunday last week and, you know, I'm there with Roy Keane and Gary Neville and Jimmy Floyd at Hasselbaink. I'm not embarrassed. I will talk my mind. You know, I have no doubt. I would stand there and go toe to toe on my opinions on football. But if you got me on Question Time tomorrow and you said you need to talk about politicians and politics, I wouldn't even turn up. I couldn't even turn up. I would not have a clue. You know, my wife's dad, God bless him, passed away not long ago. I found it hard. I didn't know what to do. I've never been in that position before. Like, thank God no one's died close to me. So I didn't know, you know, talk about addictions, talk about football, give you my experiences, strength and hope. But I didn't know what to say to my wife. Because I've never been in that position. It was horrible. It was so hard. And that was another big thing that was hard, that not knowing what to do, because I've never been in that situation before.
Mm. And then, of course, now you're on Sky and you've got a great career there.
I've been there.
So how did that transition work?
Yeah, I got a phone call one day, would you come and do a soccer special? Went on, and I like a laugh. You know, I'm one of them people. I like a laugh. I don't take myself seriously.
Yeah.
You know, I give an opinion. And I went on, I'm dyslexic, so I was messing up all the names. You know, it took me, you know, it was hard. And I just said to the bloke who was in charge at the time, Condo, I said to him, should I go on a journalist course or like, because I was getting like, you know, it's not nice. You know, you're dyslexic and you're on the telly, you're messing up names and you're like nearly 40 years of age. And he said, no, just be yourself. And that was the best bit of advice I was ever given in TV. Wow. Was just be yourself.
Yeah.
And I've been on ever since. I mean, I am, as I said, I've had three unbelievable jobs, you know, playing football. Then I was a manager, which that did foul. And I've been on Sky since for like, I think it's about 17 years now, 16 years, which has just flown by. And you know when it's enjoyable because it flies by.
Yeah.
You know, I look forward, I love Saturdays. I love football. You know what? I look back on my career now from the age of about 8, 9, 10, I was addicted to football, really addicted to football. And I think, you know, when that stopped, my drinking did start getting worse really bad. You know, it was every day my drinking in the end.
Mm. So we've got 7 minutes. I know you have to be gone on the hour.
Yeah, you're right.
So we'll do...
I'm not on the hour.
Oh, okay.
No,
you're good.
If you want to get rid of me.
Oh, no, I don't want to get rid of you. We've got an hour and 3 minutes.
Oh, okay.
But you saying about how time flies when you're enjoying yourself, well, this is how I feel about this. So.
Oh, okay. Thank you.
So we do quick fire rounds on this show. But if you've got time,
Boris
relax.
Johnson.
Yeah. Right. Let's do the what do you think about round.
Oh.
So we interviewed Gazza recently.
Right.
That's actually...
Oh, really? Wow.
Yeah. That went down really well. He was really honest, I would say.
Oh, no, he's good.
You must have some crazy stories with Gazza.
Yeah.
Anything you can share?
No. Let him tell him. Yeah.
What about your experience and memories with Gazza?
I mean, the best English player I ever played with by a million miles. And I haven't seen anybody better yet in English.
A lot of people have said that, haven't they, Harry? A lot.
He was extraordinary.
What was great about him?
Everything. He had tight control. He was quick. He was strong. He could see a pass. He was so comfortable.
Better than John Barnes?
You know what?
I'm a Liverpool fan, so
I'm biased. I think John gets a short straw because... I'm a big fan of John Barnes. John Barnes is one of the best players I ever played with. He would get in my 1-11. You know, people go, oh, when he was at England, he didn't really perform. You know, I was there when John Barnes played for England. Everybody just doubled up on John Barnes.
Yeah.
Every country you played against just tried to stop John Barnes playing. That's how good he was.
Right, yeah.
So, you know, people, when you're watching on telly and it's a little telly or some games are not even live, it was stop John Barnes.
Yeah,
he was at Liverpool and Watford. Yeah, I don't think he gets the credit he deserves. And I watched another lad the other week. I watched it on Amazon. It was the Wayne Rooney documentary. You forget how good he was.
Yeah.
I mean, scarily good. You know, I couldn't believe, you know, when I finished watching it with my boy, I was like, I give him a bit of disjustice, really, because I thought, I didn't realise you were that good. Like, it was that good.
At 16, he was that good.
Blown away. Like, you sort of take things for granted. Everybody takes things for granted, you know. and it's only when you get older you sort of you understand a little bit more. But when I'm sort of then at 16, I'm sort of younger again still then, and you just take it for granted. But now you're looking 16 years of age, like Michael Owen. I was at the World Cup when Michael Owen got his goal against Argentina. I mean, he's 17 years of age.
Is he another player that's got a bit of an unfair... Is he better than what a lot of people think?
Different kind of player. Different kind of player. Unbelievable finisher. You know, so you'd have to put him up there because, you know, the hardest thing in the world is to score goals. Mm. You know, that's why they get the top dollar. It's so hard. And he made that look so easy, but he didn't play for longevity, did he? No. You know what I mean? It was because of his hamstrings, it was so short. I remember talking to him when he was on our Zeros, and I was like, my God, I can't like watching you. I couldn't even wildest dream think of what you were doing at 17 like then. And he went, yeah, but I couldn't ever do what you were doing at 27, 28.
Right.
So, you know, but yeah, another one I don't think gets the credit. Probably because he went to Man United.
Yeah. As sorry, a Liverpool Michael. Fan, I
yeah,
feel that.
Yeah, sorry, mate.
So do you think that was a bad career move then?
I don't play for the other team.
No.
I don't, sorry. I don't play for Tottenham. I don't play for Southampton because of Portsmouth. I wouldn't play for Birmingham because of Villa. And I wouldn't play for probably Sunderland with Middlesbrough. It's just out of respect, I think. You know, at the end of the day, there's only the fans make you famous.
Yeah.
They do. If it's not for the fans coming up to talking to you, you're just the same person, you know.
Yeah.
People make you famous. And I don't think you should, you know, disrespect that.
Mm. Best player you ever played with?
Dennis Bergkamp. Yeah, by a million miles. I honestly didn't think a professional footballer could be that good. He had eyes in the back of his head. And I mean, you know, there's a saying on the pitch, you see pictures. You know, certain people, I could see pictures. I see things on a pitch quicker than a lot of other people. That was my game, but not like him. Not like him. Yeah. It was unbelievable. And he had a streak in him as well.
Yeah.
He had that hardness as well where he would, if someone hurt him, he wouldn't mind leaving his foot in. Yeah, I could. By far the best player I've ever played with.
And best player you ever played against?
Paolo Maldini. I played against Paolo Maldini, and as I said, I used to see pictures. You know, I could, you know, if the ball come now, I'd know someone's there and I could flick it round the corner. I would, like, scan the pitch before it happens. But everything I did, he was a second in front of me, and I never had that before. I'd got marked out of the game before, a lot of times. But I'd always be able to do something in a game.
Yeah.
You know, it might be one thing and the other 10 were shocking.
Mm.
Everything I did, he was like that next step. And that's when, with football, there's there and then there's there.
Right.
You know, when you talk about, there's certain players on this planet are just there.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Harry's a Man U fan. I'm a Liverpool fan. And we often have discussions. And we were talking about the twilight of Cristiano Ronaldo's career. What do you think about the end of his career and how it's going?
You know what? That's probably the hardest part of my job last season. Is being critical of one of the greatest players ever to play football, but you have to call it how you see it. You know, it's no point. I have to be honest, I see it where the fit wasn't right for me with Man United. I didn't think Man United were going to get in the top four with Ronaldo in the team. You know, Ronaldo went and put up figures which were unbelievable, you know, scored 20 goals or something, but they didn't get in the top four, and this is a team. And people will go, yeah, but he done his job scoring his goals and the team didn't, but you all move, you know. If you're not closing up front, you're going to get punished at the end before long because teams will come through you. You know, you're seeing that at Liverpool at the moment, no Mane.
Yeah.
All of a sudden, it's a bit different now, isn't it? You know, people starting to run at Van Dijk. You know, people starting to get at the midfield. You know, people don't understand the amount of hard work that Mane put in when he played for Liverpool. He stopped the service getting into the midfield where that got stopped to get into the forwards. And, you know, people are going, oh, Van Dijk's getting run at now. He's not a bad player. It's a different game now. He wasn't getting run at like that. And people start watching the telly and they're like, oh, he's just run at him. I'm going to run at him now. You know, how many times the last couple of years you've just seen people just kick the ball away when they get one-on-one with Van Dijk? It's like, I can't get past him. And it's all to do with up front.
Mm.
You know, and I thought Ronaldo was the perfect fit for Chelsea. I thought Chelsea should have gone and bought Ronaldo this season. You know, for what I said about him last season not being a fit for Man United, He was the perfect fit for Chelsea.
Right.
You know, Man United play it on the halfway line, like counter-attacking team, so you've got to run from the halfway line to get a goal, or, you know, you've got to make a run. Chelsea, I'm a Chelsea fan, you go to Stamford Bridge, you kick off, the other team sit 10 behind the ball. They dominate games in the other half. They've got two of the best wing-backs in the world of football. They're definitely in the top five or six. And they would just put balls in the box.
Mm.
And the one thing you can say about Ronaldo, he's one of the greatest finishers of all time. You don't get 700 odd goals if you're not a good finisher. So that was my hardest part of my job that I've had, is to have to criticise a player who's so great. And that was hard.
That was going to be one of my questions, actually. Because, for example, I watched Gerrard be interviewed, and he's clearly pissed off with the commentators as critics. And you must have played with some players who you're now criticising. And is there a moral dilemma going on in there?
You know what? I'm not now. I mean, I finished a long time or so that sort of path. But I don't have friends. I don't know any of the footballers, if I'm being honest. I think, if you keep honest, you're honest. Yeah. I think, and players should understand that. You know, if a player goes and scores a hat-trick one week, like Tony did last week, and we're on Sky tomorrow, and I'll be, the plaudits will be unbelievable. Mm. You know, Ivan Tony, unbelievable. Brilliant. What a hat-trick. Great. In 2 weeks' time, if he doesn't produce, you know, you have to say that ain't good enough. You know, you can't be up here 1 week and then down here. You know, or vice versa, where you can't keep on having a go at someone, and then... all of a sudden they get a hat-trick and you go, should have got four.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't like that kind of stuff. I think if you're honest, I've had players, of course you have players who blank you, who get the... They do.
Right.
They listen.
Yeah.
You know, players have feelings, you know.
Yeah.
With the Maguire one, 3 years ago, when I said, what would happen? And it probably has come true, what happened. You know, it's been tweeted enough times. I don't want to be right. But when I said it on the telly, I got home and I was like...
What was it you said?
I just said, he ain't going to suit Man United. They play on the halfway line. There's too much grass in the back. He ain't the quickest. And he'll get found out. And it was an £80 million player. Now, people have retweeted that, showed the thing, and it's like gone viral loads of times. I'm not happy with that. I'd rather be wrong. I would. I don't get nothing for being right. And I'm wrong a lot of times. But when I got home that night, and I believe what I said in certain things, but other things I got carried away, I rang up Brendan Rodgers and said, could you get me Harry Maguire? Can I have Harry Maguire's number? And I rung Harry Maguire up. And I said, I don't agree with the fee, and I do agree with some of the things that I believe what I said. But there was other things I didn't, and I just want to apologise. I went over the top.
And how did he respond to that?
Shocked.
Yeah.
Yeah, I rung up and, you know, put myself out there. But, you know, that's what I wanted to do. I was wrong. You know, there were many years ago, Oliver Holt, who's an unbelievable writer, you know, in the papers. We was on Sky and Jeff said, Oliver Holt said this. And I went off on one. And I got home and I thought, that's his opinion. It's not mine. It's his opinion. And I got hold of him and rung him up and said, sorry, you know, I shouldn't have done that. It's your opinion. Everybody has an opinion. Might not be right, but, you know, why should I be any different?
Yeah.
So that's the good things about the job. When I'm wrong, I will say I'm wrong.
Yeah.
I'm not worried about that at all, about admitting I'm wrong.
There's a big thing about opinion that we talked about. The first thing we talked about is Matt Letizia. Obviously, you're really good friends with him and his exit from Sky. What's your opinion on that?
We're close, me and Matt.
Yeah.
We're close. My thing I said to Matt, and I think this is a big compliment, but sometimes not always clever to be clever. Does that make sense?
Can you explain?
If you have certain beliefs, you don't have to share them. Do you know what I mean?
Mm.
I mean, like I'm just on the radio coming in now, and a good friend of mine, who I really like, who's a top bloke, Trevor Sinclair, done something yesterday. He believes that, but he probably shouldn't have said it. Do you know what I mean?
Mm.
And I think that was, you know, I think Tiz got, you know, I don't know if Tiz said, but he had a couple of warnings. You know, so if you have a couple of warnings, you pull it in.
Mm.
You know, and that's what, sometimes it helps me not being bright.
Mm.
You know what I mean? I'm clever in other ways, but not clever in certain other ways. And you know, I loved it. This is one of the best English football players in the world. When you talk about there's a gift, that's a gift.
Mm.
Do you know what I mean? So for me, but I don't get involved. I didn't get involved in the COVID stuff. I just, you know what I mean? It's just something that I just didn't get involved in. I just, the conversations. In that way, I'm not that bright.
Mm.
I'm not that bright about certain things. So I don't say anything.
Mm. Mm. What's the biggest risk you've ever taken?
Oh, no. You know what? Biggest risk I've ever taken. That's a good question, isn't it? It used to be getting on a plane. You know, I used to be a really good flyer and then I become really bad. But I'm a bit all right now. I can let go now.
What, you were scared of flying? Is that what
you mean? Yeah, I mean, I was great. I'd been on Concorde loads of times. You know, I was fortunate. You know, when I was a gambler, you know, I'd go over and fly over and watch New York Jets play and have a big bet. And if it won, it cost me nothing. If it didn't, it was an expensive trip. But, you know, it only took 3 hours to get there, so it weren't too shabby. But I don't know, the scariest thing I've done. The thing is, when you're an addict, you know, I fell asleep on a motorway once. And I was in the, you know, and I was under the influence. I mean, that's when I look back now, and I'm like so ashamed of that. Like, I think, my God, how bad was that? That was so bad. Yeah, but when you're in addictions, you don't get scared. I get more scared now than what I did when I was drinking and gambling and taking drugs. Because you have feelings now. I have feelings. You know, I could watch a film and cry. Before, I could watch The Champ and not even move.
Mm.
You know what I mean? So I think that's a bit of a hard one. I hope that's probably one of the regret ones I just said. But yeah, I don't really, scared-wise, I am. I'm quite scared of a lot of things. You know, I don't watch scary films. I don't.
Yeah, I don't.
Yeah, no. I just don't see, you know, it's just me. Yeah, I mean, yeah, I'm quite a scared person, full stop, if I'm being honest.
Mm.
You know, yeah.
What do you see as your biggest success?
Being me, being able to live with me, accepting me. Yeah, I would say that's the most, because for years and years I've thought that, you know, no, this is not you. You're someone different, and tried and tried, you know, right, I'm not drinking today. Do not drink today. You know, wait till 7 o'clock when the kids are asleep and then have a drink. And you get to seven and you wake up at 4 o'clock in the morning and there's like three or four bottles of wine and you're like, where the fuck did that come from? You know, so being me, living with me and accepting me, because I used to fight me, and that's a bad feeling to have, where you're fighting yourself.
Mm.
That you, I always wanted to be someone else. I always wanted to be someone else. Everywhere I went, everybody I met, I always come away with, I wish I was that person. I wish I was that person. That's not a nice feeling.
Wow.
That's not a nice feeling. Always. Now I'm better now. I do get days when I do not like Paul, and you know, sometimes it comes overwhelming again, and I think I wish I was him, but more often than not now, 99% of the time, I'm happy in my own skin. It used to be scratchy. I'd be so uncomfortable. It was like, it was my skin, but it weren't me in my body, if that made sense.
Mm.
But now I like Paul.
I think that's a perfect way to finish. Oh. Other than to say, where can we follow you and your journey and your career? Obviously, everyone knows you on Sky Sports, but is there anything that you do, you promote, or you want people to check out?
I do. I've just got involved with a platform called Recovolution, which I really believe in. It's like, it's recovery on a platform, and it's for recovering addicts, you know, and you can, it's there 24/7. It's well-being, you know, cooking, keeping fit, breathing, and connecting with anybody. Because, you know, you can wake up at 2 o'clock in the morning full of anxiety, full of panic attack, you know, and it's hard to ring up what we call a sponsor, where someone you talk to. If they're in bed at 2 o'clock, that's hard. So you could go on to Recovolution. You can might connect with someone in LA or New York or India or New Zealand or Australia. there's always someone available, and that is so important. And that's why, you know, I got involved. It was called Recovolution.
And you just Google it, go on it.
And then go on and there's so much stuff on there, you know, so much for the recovering addict, because it's a good life. You know, when you first stop and you stop drinking or taking drugs or gambling, the first thing that comes in your head is, I'm going to be boring as fuck. I'm going to be so boring. Where's the fun? Mm. But my life's so much better today than what it used to be. Yeah. When I look back now, the fun had long gone. The fun had gone at, I would say, 20-something. You know, and I carried on till 50.
So in 850 episodes that we've done, I've never sat and asked everyone listening and watching to share. I don't know why. I would like to ask everyone listening and watching to share this, because I think how open you've been is very inspiring. And I've had a lot of fun here. I don't know what time it is, which always tells me it's a good
thing. Yeah, it's a good thing. It is a good thing. No, I enjoyed it.
Thank you, Paul. Really appreciate it.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
Thank you.